Hello, you lovely podcast people, James here. I mentioned last week that this is going to be our big end of the year 2018 special. You're about to hear it. Naturally, Rick's recording went horribly wrong at his end. His laptop's been being a beast all day, so Audacity crashed out spectacularly towards the end, which means I had to rely on my backup, which I always record because I'm trying to be conscientious, but it does mean that the sound quality for Em and Rick is not as good as it usually is. It's perfectly clear, it's nothing bad or anything, but it's not as pristine and nice as I like to try and make it, so I just generally warn you guys in advance to cover my own arse so you don't think I'm a horrible technical engineer. We hope you have a great Christmas. Enjoy our top list. Hope you hear something you like. Take it easy. See you in the new year. Lots of love. Enjoy the show. And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Slightly Festive Podcast. It's episode number 469, the last episode of 2018. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today to share in our bestest games of the year, it is the return of Emily Soden.
Hello.
And the also return of Rick Cowley.
Hello.
We are gathered. Finally, it's been a lot of kind of one person on, one person off, but it's nice to get the gang back together for a bit. Even if it might be one of the last times for the full gang.
No.
It will be the last time.
No. Don't make me cry when the podcast is just starting.
Oh, we've got to do this at the top. This podcast is going to be like up. So we'll do the extremely sad bit at the beginning. Get everyone crying first. And then we can move on to the bit where dogs fly planes.
True. I mean, you guys are going to be, you know, you guys are great. Which means the next however many podcasts until you get another guest on will be fantastic.
You were never a guest, Em. You were a host. I'm sorry. They have to accept this fact. I know we had to gently pry you onto the podcast because forcing people behind mics is always a bit of an iffy thing sometimes because people are like, I don't want to talk. I don't hear my own voice. Whereas, you know, narcissists like me and Rick, we're all just like, no, play it back to me. I want it looping back in my ears. Just me all the time. What we are dancing around is the fact that this is going to be Emily's last podcast with us ever because Emily is moving on from PG and Rick and I are a little bit sad about it.
I'm devastated. I don't know. A little bit sad is a massive understatement. How dare you speak my feelings for me?
I'm sorry. I would never try to steal your truth, Rick. You go.
I'm just, it's awful, but...
Mm. Them's the breaks, my son. Them's the breaks. And so is life. It's okay.
It's not okay, Em. We're very sad because we've been enjoying the podcast chats every week. This is one of the things I sincerely look forward to because I said on the podcast before, we all work from home, we work remotely, we talk every day all the time, but it's usually via Skype or Slack or, you know, office virtual chat rather than real human contact. So as far as I'm concerned, you two are the only real people in Pocket Gamer. The rest of them are just avatars.
True.
So that's 50% of the real humans gone. I'm slightly gutted.
Just me and you now, James. The only real humans left alive.
I'm barely half a human, so this is a nightmare. Now, we should say that Emily has always had a life beyond Pocket Gamer. As I've mentioned when I think she first joined, you're an actual real life novelist, Em.
Yeah, that's true. And to be honest, that's probably what I'm going to be doing besides
novelizing,
crying and baking.
To be fair, if anyone follows, did you put it on Twitter, the bread?
Yeah, I did. I was so proud.
Yeah, you've been baking. It was tiger bread.
No, it was sourdough, which is like a 2-day process.
Yeah, I was getting blow by blow of it. I didn't realise it was so involved.
Yeah, well, neither did I.
But it came out lovely and the pics looked lush. So as well as baking bread, say you've already written one book. Tell the people what your book series is and what the first book's called.
Oh, the first book is called Trapped in Silver. It's a young adult fantasy series. Though, like, I split from my publisher earlier this year, so I'm going to go solo.
Okay.
And currently the book's offline.
Oh, right.
Like, I mean, silver linings and all that, but at least in January I'll be able to get them back up again and polish off the second one.
Three.
Nice.
So hopefully by February, yeah, February sometime, there should be the second one out as well.
That's sweet. So yeah, I've actually read some of these, and it's young adult sort of dark fantasy business, isn't it?
Yeah, lots of adventuring and sassy people and monsters and, you know, the whole shebang.
We've all written. We're all writers. Like, I do video now, but I started off as a writer. Whenever we do that thing where you go in at the end of the year and see how many words you've written, and you go, oh, I've written about 200,000-300,000 words. You look at them sometimes, you're like, oh, I've kind of written a novel of really short news pieces and feature stories that I wouldn't want to read as a novel. But the actual idea of setting out to write a novel and just going, bam, I'm going to knock out, you know, however many thousand words, 150,000. How long is a novel, Em?
Depends what you're writing. First novels tend to be about 80,000. I think The first draft of Trapped in Silver was about 120.
Damn. That just sounds daunting as hell to me.
Yeah, but it's all just like, you just kind of vomit out. And then you pick out the good stuff and you're just like, yeah, it's fine. I hate this character, she can die.
Do you have the kind of thing on your wall where you have the tree of like narrative threads and this guy's related to this guy and he's going to go through here and then she's going to come in and he kills her and then they... Do you have any of that or is it all in your head?
No, I used to. I used to have that sort of stuff. But since I got my new iPad, I got like an Apple Pencil.
Oh.
And I bought Notability, is it called?
I think so.
And it's just such a good program. I'm a really unorganized and erratic writer who's desperately trying to be organized.
So you're like... scribbling chapters on the back of bus seats and stuff.
Yeah. Chapter one is on the T1. but I write stuff out on pieces of paper and ideas and stuff, and I use like 15 different notebooks at the same time, and I'm like, where did that note go?
Yeah.
So now I can just put it all in one folder on my iPad and just be like, nope, it's done. It's good.
Splendid. Well, that means say there's going to be another book coming, and I assume, is it a planned trilogy, I'm guessing?
It was supposed to be a trilogy, but now it's a bloody quadrilogy jing-jig-jib-jib-jib-jib.
Oh, you gone full, like, full Twilight movies. You're going to break it up into two parts.
Ugh. No, when I was writing out the second book, it, like, I think in the first draft of it, this is back when I was still with my publisher, and I kept messaging him on Facebook being like, it won't end. And it was like 160,000 words long.
Oh,
and still hadn't ended. And I was like, I need to split this.
It's that stories write themselves business, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, you can go in with a plan. Like, anyone out there who, you know, wants to be a writer but is too intimidated by it, let me just say, there is no plan. Like, you can have your characters, you can have your list of chapters. And, like, what I do is I, like, jot out kind of what's going to happen, like where the beginning is, where it needs to end, the middle bits and trials and tribulations. But I think I planned the whole thing out once and it did not happen like that. Like, because your character just goes off somewhere, you're like, hang on, where are you going? And then they turn around to you in prose form, like, ah, go away. I've got my own stuff to do. You can come along, but just watch me happen.
Well, if people want to follow when the books come back online, the first one and obviously the second one appears, you are at E.T. Soden. S-O-W-D-E-N on the Twitters.
See?
So people listening to this should definitely go and follow if you don't already. And then you can carry on keeping up with Em's work from the future, because this is certainly not the last that we will hear from her on the writing front, whether that be in the media or in the books or anything else. But we're selfishly cross because we can't chat to you all day now. Well, we can, but we have to do it covertly.
I can just sneak on Twitter or occasionally pop back up on Slack and be like, woo, we did.
So everyone listening, please pour one out for our comrade, but don't think she's going to vanish from your feeds, because she's certainly not vanishing from ours. And also, you're still going to be probably doing reviews and bits and bobs for PG anyway.
Yeah, I'll still be around. You can't get rid of me that easily.
It's not a full break, so don't have to worry. But we're still sad. However, That's the sad up bit out of the way. Let's go on to the good stuff, which is the year in mobile gaming, Switch gaming, anything that you can carry around with you and play games on in general. 2018 has been quite good as far as the games go, and we have all chosen, after a long and, deliberate process, probably tedious because we were arguing about it yesterday, process of choosing our favorite games from 2018. Specifically for the podcast, we've each chosen our top three games. I don't know if they're in any particular order, mine aren't, but there are three favorite games of the year individually. There will also be a Pocket Gamer top five games of the year that would be going up on the website that we've kind of all decided upon within the whole group. So everybody involved and Harry and Dave and everyone. So you'll be able to see that in a few days, I guess. I think that we'll schedule this podcast for Friday, so it'll probably be up by then. So if you want to see the kind of aggregated list, you can check that out. But this is more of our own personal tastes reflected in the kind of stuff that we like to play. So if you've heard the podcast for the past year, you've probably got a good idea of what we might be going for. We'll also go through a few also-rans and other games that we thought were good but didn't quite make the cut. So we'll do this in a kind of round-robin sort of way. And I guess save your favourite, just one to last or do whatever. But let's start with Rick. What's one of your favourite games from 2018?
So, I didn't expect to like this game. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. But I would say that probably one of my favourite games is Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu or Eevee, whichever one you prefer.
Which one did you get?
So I ended up getting Eevee.
Okay.
The best Pokemon.
Of course. And it turns out that Eevee is adorable and wonderful, and therefore everything is right in the world. So I went into it kind of, I knew from playing it at preview, it's basically just a remake of the Red and Blue and Yellow games, and therefore it's probably going to be good. And what I didn't realize is how much I'd actually, like, lose myself to it. I spent a good, like, it's very rare these days that I will spend, like, five straight evenings sat playing the same game and just spending hours and hours and hours going through it and just doing everything I can. But I found myself doing exactly that in Let's Go. And it's just, it so beautifully captures what made the original games so good, but takes it and makes it into a new experience, and just, it doesn't try and play on your nostalgia too much, but it's still, and instead they've made like a new game that just happens to have lots of references to the old one. And I think that's kind of just how it works, is that it's not just a remake, it's a complete reimagining of the entire thing.
Ask actually, if you've just come from one of the games that it's based on, because which specifically are they based on? The
Red, Blue, and Yellow.
Okay. So if you came from playing one of those games and then you fired up this one, what's the biggest difference? What's the thing that's like changed the most that you'll notice?
I guess catching Pokemon, because instead of wandering through the long grass and you occasionally have random battles, instead you see the Pokemon in the long grass and you can choose whether to run up to them or run away from them. And if you get into a battle with them, you don't sort of directly fight them. Instead, it goes into Pokemon Go mechanics and you can just throw Pokeballs at them or feed them berries to make them easier to catch, kind of thing.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
So it's a bit more deliberate.
Yeah. It's a really weird change, but it helps speed the game up, and it means you're not like suddenly getting stuck in a series of really long and tedious battles later on when you just kind of want to rush through. And you're still getting experience points from catching the Pokemon, so there's still a reason to catch them. And then, like in Pokemon Go, you can send them to the professor and he gives you candies in exchange for them, which you can then use to power up the Pokemon you actually want to hold on to. It all kind of, they've thought about how to make it work with the mechanics and sort of fit that in with the original thing. And there is still trainer battles in there, so there is still a fully fledged combat system in there. There's all the exploration, there's the special moves, except they're all attached to your Eevee or Pikachu, rather than having to give them to Pokemon in your party and then like wasting a spot on, you know, cut or that kind of thing. It was amazing to me how much I loved it and just completely like fell back in love with Pokemon again, because I haven't played a proper Pokemon game in years and years and years. And it wrapped me up and made me feel special and warm and happy. And every moment of it was joyous. And yeah, it was a magnificent experience that I had no idea I was going to get out of it. And so I was thinking about this list and I thought, actually, that is probably one of my favorite games of the year, because just of how happy it made me.
You played this. Did you also climb into bed with it?
Yes, I did. I held it close.
Eevee? Or Pikachu?
Of course it was Eevee.
I'm just checking.
And you get your little hats.
Affiliation either way.
Little hats, little shirts. In fact, it gives you little presents like wrapped in a little leaf with a flower.
Yeah. Oh. And you're like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this leaf. And then you can't sell it for anything. So you just got this leaf in your inventory. But it's like,
but it's precious, Rick. Me a leaf.
I know, but I needed the money.
Hard times.
Mood.
Goodness me. Okay, so one of the few ones, I mean, anything Switch related, obviously I haven't played, but I take you guys at your word. You know what you're talking about when it comes to all the Pokemon business. So, well-deserved, I'm sure, Pokemon Let's Go. Emily, what's one of your bestest from the year?
I've got two solid ones and the third one, which is Chipped and Changed. I think I'm actually going to change it again.
Okay.
Because it was originally going to be Candleman.
Right.
Good game. Then I forgot about Death Coming.
Oh, Death. Okay, yeah, go on then.
Yeah. Did any of you guys play this?
No. I remember the icon, but I have no idea what it is or if it's any
good. I'm just checking it's the game I think it is. It is the game I think it is. Yes, I have played a bunch of this.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's really, really addicted. Addictive.
I thought you were going to go full American then. Addicting.
Addictive.
Then I would have had to draw the line.
Would have kicked me out sooner. But yeah, so you play as this dude who's gotten killed somehow, and then Death is like, hey man, you could either go to heaven or hell or wherever, or you could be my apprentice and we can go and kill people together.
Mm.
Like, is it like a soul harvester? And it sounds really malicious, but the whole thing is just so utterly daft that it makes it feel okay.
So it's, if you haven't seen it, it's like an isometric game. It almost looks like those kind of management games, like your sim hospitals and all that kind of business.
Yeah.
And instead of helping people, you're wandering around and engineering like interesting ways for them to die by messing with the environment mostly, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've got a certain amount of souls you have to harvest. If there's a bunch of people swimming in the pool, if you time it right, you can drop something to electrocute them all or something like that.
Yeah.
But the people get in and get out, and there's events that make them all scramble. So if you trigger an event before you kill all those people, you can't do them anymore.
Mm.
So it's like, as well as the satisfaction of like solving this really morbid puzzle, you've also got to figure out the best timing to do so. Like,
yeah,
the map that I found the most fun, like where I realized how intricate everything was the history one, the one where they're at the museum.
The museum, yes.
Yeah, and like there are so many things that you can trigger, but you can only trigger them once.
Mm.
And sometimes you've got to trigger one thing to like herd a bunch of people into another area where you can trigger another thing. So if you do it out of order, it just messes up the whole system, and it's like, nah, and you can't redo it. You have to just live with it.
It's that systems interacting with each other thing. Mm. Where, you know, if you want to get a crowd of people, you can get them into an area by, say, firing an alarm or something, and they all gather in a place, and then that happens to be a place near the guard tower, and there's a guard dog in there, and if you open the guard dog thing, then the guard dog can run out and savage all of them, but maybe if there's only one person there, they'll only get one. So if you want to maximize your death, you want to make sure you've gathered them all first. So it's, yes, interplaying with one another. And then Dracula appears.
Yep, and then Dracula appears.
He does. It's in the museum. They've got like a coffin exhibit, if you open the coffin, Dracula pops out, turns into a bat, and starts killing people.
Okay.
Yeah, this thing is just like one of those games you got to go in and just be like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it.
It's but good.
It's just so clever and so morbidly wonderful.
And this one worked. It's iPhone and iPad. It's not on Android.
No, it is on Android, I think.
It's on Android now. Oh, cool.
It is, but weirdly enough, it's not as good as the iPad version.
No?
No, I don't. I mean, this was months ago when I played it, because I think it's still free to play there. And also, like, when it came out, some of the translation was a bit wrong.
Okay.
And, like, the frame rates weren't as good. But, like, you know, I'm sure they fixed it by now, either which way.
Well, we've got a review for this one up on PG, obviously, and there is a video. I had fun with this one. Actually, the people liked it as well. There was comments all very positive about folks who'd played it. So that's good. I'd forgotten about that one. That should have been on my also-ran list. So Death Coming is the name of that one, and that's entirely worth your time. What shall I go with? Let's go with one of the, I guess, more popular ones, or the ones that got a bit of attention. So Donut County, which is something that I think hovered around all of our lists a little bit. We all liked this one.
Yeah.
So this is a game where you play as a hole. You are a hole, and you drag yourself around the ground, swallowing stuff up. And the more stuff you swallow, the bigger the hole becomes. And that's kind of it for at least the first like half an hour of the game. That's all you're doing. The world itself is this bizarre, surreal, cartoonish affair where your main characters are some kid and a cheeky ass raccoon. And they're just like texting each other all the time, banging on about crap. And it is actually quite funny. Like, not just like, very funny, well done, haha, kind of bad jokes. Actually quite wittily written. I think this is like a passion project that's done by one person over about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, Ben Esposito, I think it is.
Yeah.
Was he also working on Firewatch?
Was he?
I feel like Ben Esposito was at some point.
That's impressive if he was. The art style is kind of, you can see.
I could be way off, and now I feel really stupid about saying that out loud. Because I'm worried.
We can cut it out.
It might be. I will not be cutting anything. But it might well be.
No, I got confused. No, he worked on What Remains of Edith Finch.
Oh, okay. That's also good, though. That's a great game. I really liked that. But that's very much a narrative.
Just to derail this completely, he also apparently worked on Sonic Dreams Collection, which I don't know if anybody remembers that horrifying nightmare.
Yes.
Yeah.
He worked on... Okay. Right, it's all falling into place. Well, the fact that this is very surreal, so it does fit in. I suggest people YouTube the Sonic Dream Collection, because, yes, it's the stuff of nightmares. along with a lot of the Sonic output for the past 10 years from the official Sega company, but there you go. So this is a game where you take control of the hole and move stuff around and swallow things. Later on, levels become much more of a puzzle. So it's not just swallow everything and the level's completed. It becomes like, right, you need to activate certain points. You need to start, for example, getting a hot air balloon to take off. So in order to do that, you realize that there is a kiln located on one of the levels. And if you swallow the kiln, because the kiln is on fire, then smoke and stuff starts pouring out of your hole. And if you push that underneath the hot air balloon, it kind of inflates it and allows it to take off. And then you can suck up the struts that were holding the hot air balloon there, and boom, it takes off, and that's how you complete the level. Later on, you start like sucking down fireworks, and then you can fire the fireworks out of the hole, which you need to... You get a really high camera angle, and there's some dude like dangling off a cliff or something, and you just smash fireworks into them. It gets surprisingly complex and intricate, and it's always funny, it's always inventive, it's, say, genuinely quite funnily written, and it's quite unlike anything I've played before. I've not played a game where you're a hole. That was a new mechanic to me, and a very welcome one. So we were all big fans of this on the site. I think everybody really liked it. So we'd rate that one as one of the best. It's, I think, on PC as well.
PC, PS4, and mobile, and Switch as of today.
Oh, okay.
Tuesday the 18th, just launched.
All right, so double mobile then. That's really good news. If you haven't played this one, it's a kind of a small indie affair, and it is a passion project, but it's weird. It's unusual, and it's not like anything you'll have played before. Definitely give it a look. Donut County is the name of that one. Videos and reviews all up on the site. Cool. Right then, back to Rick. What's the next on your list?
Next, I'm going to talk about Alto's Odyssey, which I'm sure we all have played and all have loved.
Oh, yes.
The sequel to Alto's Adventure, which is one of the hallmarks of mobile gaming, and it just takes the formula, does exactly the same thing, adds a couple of tweaks, and is all the better for it, for not changing anything too drastically.
Yeah.
It's just, I really loved it because it's just so calming and beautiful and easy to pick up and play, but difficult to master, which is always a good thing in a game. As I say, it didn't change anything too much, it just added on to the old Alto's Adventure stuff. So you got wall riding on big walls now, which then feeds into some of the chasm jumps, which makes them a bit easier at times, or maybe a bit harder, depending on how good you are at them.
That was the big addition for the new version. But actually, as you mentioned, like one of the only additions.
Yeah. And then it was stuff like they added tornadoes as well, I think, were new. And
yeah.
All the rails are like attached to hot air balloons, so they slowly rise up in the air and make them harder to get to.
Yeah, that's a lovely touch.
And the weird waterfalls that just come out of nowhere that give you a speed boost as well. So it's all sorts of that tiny little touches that you slowly open up throughout the game. And also the fact that you now go into different biomes rather than having just the same kind of world that makes no difference apart from background stuff. Like when you go into a different biome, you'll experience different setups of like more waterfalls or absolutely no waterfalls at all, or that kind of thing. And it's one of those games that's incredibly easy to play. and you play it for a round and you go, okay, that was fun. Oh, I'll play another one. And then 3 hours later, you're like, I should probably stop now. It's just, it's so easy just to completely lose yourself in and just forget about everything else and just play Alto's Odyssey for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And then you can just whack it on Zen mode if you don't care about score and just keep playing without crashing and dying at any point. And yeah.
Most games should have some kind of Zen mode, some exactly. kind of infinite mode, because it makes such a difference to stuff where you're just like, I just want to be in the world for a bit.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it just lets you have a nice time. That you don't have to go through the objectives and unlock everything, but they are there if you want something to strive towards. You don't have to go for the high scores, but it's something to strive towards. You can just pick it up, slowly go down some mountains, dodge some rocks, and just, yeah, it's just so beautiful and gorgeous. And if you haven't played it, then you've wasted 2018.
And don't be put off by the fact that some people go like, oh, it's just the same as the first one, it's not worth your time. Because well, Rick says, like, it is very, very similar. They very deliberately haven't changed a lot. There is an interview that we did with the developers on the podcast. You can go and listen to them talking about it. And I asked them and say that it's really not that different, is it? You guys have kind of kept it fairly similar. And they're like, yeah, it was totally deliberate. We didn't want to. The more you push it away, the more complicated you make it. Because there are no buttons on the screen. It's just jump. That's all you have. And if you start adding like tricks and modifiers and extra buttons and twitches and everything, it becomes a completely different game. It becomes a Tony Hawk's. And as we've seen from Tony Hawk's last week, that's not necessarily something you want. Because it becomes complicated and buggy and a bit rubbish. The whole thing of this is it's super streamlined and super elegant. And I thought it was a worthy follow-up. And yeah, Rick's right. We all kind of, it appeared on all of our lists of like, we should mention this at some point. So thanks for mentioning it, and do go and get it. It's a premium game. It's got no ads or any business, at least on iOS. I don't know what they did with the Android version.
I think the Android version is free to play again, but I actually kind of like the Android free to play model.
Yeah,
because when you crash, you can watch an ad and then you keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. I quite like that, because in the iOS version you've got one shot and then you're done, whereas Android, you know you have to watch an ad, but it's 15 seconds of your life and you get to carry on. I don't know, that's just me.
No, that works too. So go grab that one. And obviously, as with all these games, videos, reviews, they're all available if you want to check them out. If you've got a new iPhone on the way or a new Android device you're picking up over Christmas or something like that, lots of lovely games for you to play. And we're going to, I think, do some kind of list of like, if you've just picked up a new phone, here's the stuff you've missed. And here's what you should go and grab for any newcomers. Emily, what's next on your list?
It is Pocket City.
Pocket City. Oh, yes, I do remember this.
Yeah, I think we'll go with that one. Because people weren't too sure about this. It was a raved about City Builder because it was premium. Because I think this was $4.99.
Yeah, it was not cheap as far as these things go.
Yeah, so it was $4.99 on the old iPad. And, oh boy, I lost a couple of days of my life to this game. It's a City Builder. You guys know what that is. Where you start from scratch, you build roads, you build up your community centers and things. What I really liked about it is its simplicity, that it had three primary areas, you know, industry, commercial, and housing, residential. Yes. So you had to balance the three, because obviously the more commercial stuff there was, the happier everyone would be. The more industry, the more residential stuff you needed because people were coming into work and stuff. You needed roads to stop the traffic from blocking up. Then as your city grows, you then need places to farm, industry places to ship out. You need your police station, your fire station, and like generally just to beat down crime and stuff. So you keep expanding and expanding and buy up all the land around it.
Hmm.
And then this massive tornado just comes through and ruins half of your city. This is the first time it happened. I think I'd been playing for about 2.5 hours and it just destroyed half my city. I was like, I don't know what just happened.
Decimated. Nature is a cruel mistress.
Exactly. It was so perfect. I just sat there. I was like, oh, my work. It like taken out all my farms. I was like, no.
It was nice to see a premium iteration of this kind of formula on mobile, because very often there are other games that do this plenty on mobile, and they're always the standard kind of free-to-play model of you're unlocking things and then you're waiting X number of days for something to be built before you can use it or to have enough gems, and gems are popping out all over the place that you're collecting in order to power it, and that's not the same here. You're still earning cash and obviously generating income and stuff, but there's not that grindy feel to it.
No, it feels like, premium.
Yeah.
Like it's a genuine premium like experience, and everything has a quality about it that makes the experience so enjoyable. Because I cannot, like, the thing is, I don't mind free to play stuff. If you do it right, free to play stuff can be fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it's the overly intrusive advertising that gets me. And you know, the advertising for IAPs and stuff, and like, you could buy 50 gems right now and you could finish the project right now, or wait 10 hours, you know, it's up to you, whatever.
Like a loser.
Like a loser. And of course, I will always wait. You could just get on with it. Like, I built up my entire city in like one evening. And then it was more about maintenance. You got to maintain it, like
keeping the
power.
The thing running.
Yeah, you've got to connect all the powers, and you need highways, but if your highways are connected, like replace your regular roads, and that is where the residential stuff, power grids don't run on the highways, so all of your houses lose power. So it just turns into problem solving.
It's tough social planning lessons that are learned through Sim. I think the same thing with all the SimCity games, where you start to realize like this whole like regional planning thing and getting permissions and putting the residential areas right next to the industrial areas, and the fact that everyone living on the border is incredibly unhappy and belching up black smoke. You go, actually, this whole planning stuff's quite difficult, and doing it in real life must be an absolute nightmare. But I also agree with this one. You can obviously see the review. You did the review, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
I feel like. Pocket City is the name of that one. That's premium, as you said, $4.99 on iOS. I don't know if it's available on Android, actually.
It is probably not
at $4.99.
I believe it is. Oh, it might be free to play?
Hang on, let me check. I've got my phone.
I feel like
that
would be a massively bold move if it was Fiverr on Android.
Hang on, it's
$3.49.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, ooh, that's still bold.
Yeah, it's still pricey for an Android game. But yeah.
I'd pay for it, though.
It will be making an appearance in the Pocket Gamer Advent Calendar.
Ooh, yes. Everyone get on over to PG for that, by the way.
You could win a free copy of Pocket City and Alto's Odyssey. I probably shouldn't be revealing these, but just for the podcast listeners, you know, just for a special reward for tuning in.
It's every day we're giving you the chance to win free games from our lovely list, and we've been hooking up with all the good developers like we do every year. So yes, check PG daily for exciting and cool stuff you can get your hands on. Right, what shall I do? I'm going to do Elo, which is ELOH, which is a musical tile puzzler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm going to guess not a lot of people have played, but I think is really, really superb. So this is difficult to explain it. So imagine there are a bunch of face masks hanging on your wall, right?
Already terrified.
Cool, excellent. Now, there are also speakers placed on this wall, and they're angled at like 45 degree and 90 degree increments. And there is a little dot or buzzer or bell or something also located on this wall. So you've got speakers, masks, and then a buzzer. The idea is these speakers fire out sound waves, and these sound waves are represented by little dots, little balls that leave like a vapor trail flying through the air. And they fire in whatever direction the speaker is facing. And you've got to get those sound waves directed towards that bell, that buzzer at the end of the level. In order to do that, you need to start moving the face masks around the wall so that the little sound waves, the balls, will ricochet off those masks. Again, usually at 90 degree angles. So by repositioning the masks on the screen, you'll be able to fire it off, bounce it off that one, and it will go from, you know, diagonally down to the right, and then it goes boop, and go diagonally down to the left instead. And then you place another mask there, and it goes boop, bounces off up to the top right corner, and then bang, it'll hit the buzzer at the end. So it's like a redirection game. That's what the essence is. However, it's actually a rhythm action game, really, because as soon as you press play on the speaker, it starts firing these things out at regular pulses and intervals. It's going doot, doop, doot, doop, doop. And then every time it hits a mask, it's like doot, doop, doot, doop, doop, doop. And as you start to redirect and add masks to the path of this sound wave, you start getting these much more complicated, and it builds a beat based on the obstacles that it's encountering on its way to that final buzzer.
Sorry, I just love your own soundtrack, and now I'm praying that the game actually is just you making mouth noises.
It doesn't sound a million miles away, I've got to be honest. It does sound a bit like that.
Really, it does sound very similar, but we'll get used to the sequel.
If you like that sweet scat, then you'll approve of this game. So that's the basic core of it. And as you start to progress through the game, you get different coloured masks which change the colour of the sound wave, and that means that it will interact with obstacles in a certain way. Because, for example, there might be barriers where the barrier will be coloured black or pink or orange, and that means the sound wave has to be black or pink or orange in order to pass through it, and if it's the wrong colour, it'll just bounce straight off. So you need to start placing, right, we need the black mask here, because when it hits the black mask, the sound wave will go black, and that'll allow it to pass across that black barrier, and then we can put an orange one to bounce off the bottom, and then it hits the top, and then it goes through the orange barrier, and so it becomes much more complicated in terms of the pathfinding. But it's also a bit like kind of Zen mode in Alto's Odyssey. It's very relaxing. It's very chill. And no matter what you're doing, it's not like if you put it in the wrong place, it suddenly goes doot-doot and makes horrible noises. It's always, you know, popping out this rhythm. And it sort of sits quietly in the background. And as Harry was doing this in the review, and I think we did it as well, because we're conditioned to try and do a perfect run in a game, right? The idea is, like, I'm going to move all these bits, and then once it's all in the right place, I'm going to press the speaker and it'll fire out, and I'll just immediately finish a level and it'll be great. Whereas the actual fun of the game is, when the level starts off, just press the speaker immediately, and then start moving things around. And what will happen is, the beat will be constantly changing throughout the level until you find the solution. So it's this thing that kind of organically develops and changes and fluctuates in the background while you're making up your mind and switching things around. And then when you find the correct answer, suddenly it all falls into place and it's really, really satisfying. And you get the finished tune, if you like, the finished beat. And it's just this great thing. And that's not to say anything about how beautifully it is presented. Every time a sound wave ball hits one of the masks pull this kind of crazy ass face, because they almost look like tribal masks, and they, you know, have big eyes and they pop out of their skulls like some kind of Warner Brothers cartoon. And it's fantastic. The guys who did this are the same guys who did Old Man's Journey, which is basically just a beautiful sort of, it's interactive, but mostly you're just looking at this old dude walking through different layers of the landscape, and it's beautifully presented, and the same kind of caliber of art direction is visible here. And I just think it's a great thing. It's totally premium, it's totally lush. Only downsides might be, I think it's about 76 levels in total, which, you know, might feel a bit short to some people if you're like trying to rush through it or do a speed run or something. But that's not what it's about. It's about enjoying the flux and the bounce and the popping and the silly noises. And it's great. So video reviews for that one available, ELOH, premium and available on both the App Store and Google Play at the minute. So do go grab it. Right, nearing the end now. So, final picks for everybody, starting once again with Rick.
I think, and I saved the best till last.
Oh, yes.
I think my game of the year is going to actually be Detective Pikachu on the 3DS.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the trailer. Okay, the game.
No. Game of the year is trying not to freak out over the trailer of the Detective Pikachu movie. No, the game is actually genuinely fantastic.
This is the game people weren't entirely sure they wanted, was it?
Yeah. So it came out in Japan a while ago, and then it's very slowly made its way over to the West. And it's basically, you are a boy called Tim, who goes to Rhyme City to go and track down his father, who's gone missing. And his dad's a detective, and it turns out he used to work with a Pikachu as his companion, and the Pikachu can talk to Tim, but no one else can understand the Pikachu. But the Pikachu can also talk to other Pokemon. So you can sort of use that to your advantage to interrogate everybody. And you partner up with this Pikachu, who is just known as Pikachu, and wears a little Deerstalker. And you go around and you have to solve mysteries and talk to people. And it's basically just a very simple point-and-click adventure. Feels kind of like the exploration parts from the Ace Attorney series, but without the courtroom scenes afterwards or anything like that.
Right.
And it's... And then there's a few like quick time events and stuff like that. And it's at its core, it's quite a simple game. It's just go to this place, look at these things, talk to these people, maybe complete a puzzle. It's incredibly easy. Or like say this specific thing to this person, uncover more conversation trees and stuff like that. But the thing that makes it so good is how straight it plays itself. Like, it could have been a very silly, very kiddie, oh, look, it's all the cute Pokemon and they're talking. And it's more like, oh my God, something horrible is happening to the Pokemon and we have to stop it. Because it's this whole thing about that Pokemon are going insane and attacking everybody, but no one knows why they're doing it.
That's the plot, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, the Pokemon are just, all of a sudden, they'll turn red, their eyes will go red, they'll go out, like, just outraged and start attacking humans and everything in their path until they get exhausted and then have to have a nap.
They've got the rage virus.
Yeah.
This is 28 Pokemon later.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
And then, like, so it's like, and a theme park's had to shut down because of it, because a Charizard ended up, like, setting people on fire. Like, no one dies or anything like this, but it's quite perilous situations in which these enormous Pokemon are just attacking people in the streets.
Okay.
And it's got that sort of weirdly dark story to it, and then there's all the stuff about your dad gone missing, and that's kind of shrouded in mystery as well. He might have been killed, you don't know. Like, it's just,
and Pikachu himself is this, like, hard-boiled noir.
Yeah, he's this, like, grouchy detective with a gruff voice who's always drinking coffee. And, you know, it gets into silly interactions because he can't use his Pokemon powers at any time. So he's, like, there just struggling to electrocute people and just can't do it. And that's kind of funny. And there's a button that you can press on the screen at any time and it'll trigger a cutscene with Pikachu for some reason. And it's context sensitive. So if you stood near certain Pokemon, they'll have a small interaction with those Pokemon or with another human. Or most of the time he'll just come up to you and tell you something interesting about coffee, which is really bizarre.
Okay.
It's got a really great soundtrack. The world is really lovely. The art style is great. The voice acting is surprisingly good, particularly Detective Pikachu. He did a really great job on that.
And it's totally different from the Ryan Reynolds
VO. Oh, yeah, like, completely. Like, they played it as a proper hard-boiled detective kind of thing, which I think is more interesting than just have Ryan Reynolds doing Ryan Reynolds, but gotcha. So it goes. But yeah, I think it's a game that most people are going to sort of look at and go, oh, it's just a silly kids game, and I'll just watch the movie instead. But I think actually it is a kids game, and it obviously it's a Pokemon game, so it's always going to be a bit silly. But it's actually a lot of fun. It's really interesting. Some of the puzzle, the detective stuff is fairly easy to work out. It's not like going to tax your brain too much. But there are some bits that you kind of go, oh, I wonder what I got to do here, or I need to be careful in this section because there's like stealth bits and stuff like that, but they work okay. And yeah, it's just a really gentle, lovely, interesting game. And it's one of those games that you never expect to happen. And and you think, like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's difficult to describe, but it's kind of like Nintendo have finally, and the Pokemon Company, they're finally going, right, what can we do with these franchises that makes them more interesting? And we're in that
go
sort
beyond
of,
the standard template.
Exactly. And we're in that kind of that realm again. It happened back in the GameCube when they started giving Mario a water pack and all that kind of stuff. And now we're on the Switch.
Paper Mario and all that business.
And now we're on the Switch and they're doing it again. And they've got like Breath of the Wild, which is totally different to all the Zelda games. You got Mario Odyssey, which does new things. And they're experimenting again. And Detective Pikachu is this incredibly weird experiment that couldn't have come out of anything else other than Nintendo's current climate and decision to sort of experiment. And it's just a really weird, interesting nugget of a game that I think not enough people played and I absolutely loved, and it's going to stay with me for years and years and years as just a really lovely experience.
How well did it do? Is this 3DS or is this Switch?
This 3DS, so I don't think it's
3DS.
I don't think it did particularly well sales figures. I don't remember any sales figures coming out about it, but I think if it had come to Switch, more people would have played it because 3DS is kind of dying at this point. And it was probably the only big 3DS game released this year, which is depressing when you think about it. But yeah, hopefully it gets like a re-release on Switch or something.
Maybe
more people will play it, or they could port it to mobile because there's been plenty of DS ports to mobile. And I think it would work fine because there's nothing on it that would be particularly taxing to do with mobile controls. But yeah, I think if you've got a 3DS and you're still, you know, you know where your charger is and you're thinking, maybe I should play a new game. Detective Pikachu is absolutely brilliant and everyone should play it, and it's my game of the year.
Right on. I could actually technically play that one because I do have the 3DS somewhere.
Do it. It's so good.
Might take it with me to Colombo. That'd be sweet. Okay. All right then. Em, what are you rating as your game of the year?
My final one, and this in no particular order.
Yeah.
Is Night in the Woods.
Night in the Woods.
Night in the
but
Woods.
But that came out years ago. Well,
yeah, I know,
ago,
but it only
ago.
Came out on the Switch this year, so yeah.
I'll let it slide.
Thank
All
you.
Right, then.
Yeah, this is just, I mean, I've been very vocal, like, even before I think I joined the PG team about how much I love Night in the Woods.
Mm.
And, you know, having it to play on the Switch, you know, portably, has been rather wonderful. It's a linear narrative game where you play as a... Oh, what are they called? Wait.
Cat?
She's a cat, isn't she?
Yeah, but I was thinking of the proper word for, you know, a human-like animal.
Anthropomorphic.
Morphic, that's the one. Anthropomorphic.
One of them. Yeah. That's right. It is a bugger. It's one of those, yeah.
Human-like so cat.
Human-like cat. Where she comes home from college because she's not feeling it and reconnects with her friends, which she left there. And it's just a game about friendship and stuff to a certain point, and then it starts getting really weird. Like, it gets a little bit mysterious, a little bit spiritual, a little bit really far out and a bit ghosty. And, oh, man. Oh, this game just killed me.
See, I have you to thank for playing this, because I've played this as well, and I played it this year, but it was on the PS4.
Mm.
And it had always been on my list, but like when you started to big it up, I was like, actually, I do have to give this one a look. And I loved it as well. What is it you think that really works about this? Because people might look at it and go, oh, it's like almost it's like a point-and-click adventure, like because it's done in that almost 2D cutout paper animation style, and you're just, you know, scrolling backwards and forwards, and there's lots of speech bubbles and just chatting. And it looks like a lot of revisiting the same areas. And when you play it, you do. You take a lot of the same routes. You keep walking the same walk from your house through the city to see your friends either at their work or at their houses.
Yeah.
Or go to gigs or something. What is the heart of the game? What makes it so good?
This, like, despite its beautiful aesthetic, like this, you gotta admit that the game looks stunning. It's got so much personality in it, and the audio is phenomenal. Like, you know, none of the voices are narrated, but I mean, like, the atmospheric sort of sounds. What makes this game so good to me is that it's all about people. It's all about friendship.
Yeah.
And it's that it's got such a strong sense of character for every single one of the main characters, because there's May and B, and then there is, oh God, they've gone out of my head.
You've got
head.
Greg, who's Greg. The little fox, the couple is Greg and Angus, the big
thank
bear.
You. I couldn't remember Angus. Oh, which is the same because he's so good. But like the whole thing is you've got, you know, Greg, Angus, B and May, and they all have their positives and they've all got their negatives, but not in a cliched kind of way, in a real way. Because these all take on forms of animals and things. So it's like, oh, well, we're not animals. But there are some of us that do suffer from these flaws. It's a huge thing about family, about concerns about money, about, you know, the cost of living and trying to get by and not being happy about your job and struggling with mental health and like being abused and things like that. Oh.
And she herself, when she first turns up, it's like, you're not necessarily hugely sympathetic to her at the beginning, because she seems a bit like, oh, I don't want to be here, and she's got that slight like attitude.
Yeah, she seems like a bit of a dick.
Yes, pretty much. But that's not how you leave the game. That's only at the beginning, and then as the narrative opens up and it hints at maybe what she's going through and the issues she's struggling with and the interactions with the other characters, all of whom they're all working jobs and she's not. She's come back from uni, she's not doing anything, and there's this constant background like, what are you doing today, May? Because we're working, like, what are you up to? And this underlying cause for why she might be in this particular state, and you really, really empathize with her as the story goes on.
Yeah, and it's just that, it's that kind of realness. Like, the people who made the game could have just gone for a wacky, wild adventure kind of, well, as we're edgy teenagers / young adults. But they twin it with, like, fantastic writing off the bat, first off.
It is very well
written. It's full of humor and heartbreaking honesty and things. But when they bring in all of the real world issues, it just kind of hits at home, and it just takes it to such another level of just being so, well, you just got to invest in it.
How did you feel about the other stuff? Because I know the direction the story takes when you're talking about it goes a little bit mystical, a bit spooky. I think a lot of people were slightly turned off by that bit. It kind of comes out of nowhere, very much in the final act, and you're like, oh, okay, this is where we're going. See, I didn't mind it, but I know some people felt like it sort of came from nowhere. Were you okay with it?
Yeah, I also wasn't that fast on it. I do think it felt a little bit unfinished, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
It kind of like, because it does come out of nowhere, besides, you know, the beginning bit where suddenly something appears and they're like, oh, that's very strange.
Set it up.
Yeah, set it up to this thing. But then there's a huge gap between that happening and this first event happening. Where it was all about, you know, focusing on May and her relationship with her old friends and things. When the mystical elements start coming into it, I was so sorry about it. It just felt a tiny little bit rushed.
It crescendos very quickly and it doesn't give you the chance to sit. Whereas the stuff that's taken its time really, really lands. So all the small character stuff, because you are living with these people doing the same, when she gets out of bed every day and walks the same road every day.
Yeah.
Initially, you're like, oh, this is going to be tedious. When you realize it's going to repeat itself, like, oh, but then you kind of realize that's sort of the point they're making.
Yeah.
That she's just going into the same city, passing the same people who are having very similar, they are different conversations, but similar conversations. And it's getting over this idea of what it's like to be in a small town where nothing's really happening and feel like there's nowhere to go and that you're at a dead end.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, are we getting too real, Rick?
Yeah, I'm nearly in tears thinking about the game because I really resonated with it when I was playing it. I was like, Jesus, this is accurate to what I have been through. Like, oh God, the crushing. It hits home really, really hard. It's really good at that crushing reality and depression of feeling like a failure and moving back in with your parents after uni and just, oh God.
Yeah, that's the thing. The thing is, like, the way that the economy and the way that the world is going at the moment, you know, it's hard. It's really hard for our generation to get by. Mm. So I think I definitely related to the events of the Night in the Woods, not the mystical events, but the general like feelings and thoughts of the characters, not only May but like the other ones as well, you know, a lot more than I initially thought I would. And as I've grown older and obviously have gained more responsibility and grown up, apparently it's becoming more and more realistic, and it's definitely something that young adults will be able to resonate with for ages because it's just a fact of life.
No, I agree. And yes, for those of you who are saying, hang on, this game came out in 2016 or whatever. Yeah, it's true. All right, you guys. But it is this year on the Switch, and a lot of people won't have played it. And so if they haven't, then I think we're all happy to say they definitely should. It's a cracking thing. So go and have a look at that one. My game, again, no particular order. My last one seems quite frivolous now in comparison to that.
That mood like way down.
And now I'm going to be like, oh, it's a little UFO with a grabber on him. Isn't it cute?
Yeah, but it's good. Bring it right back up again.
Yeah, we need to finish on a high. Come on.
All right then. Part-time UFO, you guys.
Woo!
This is the best game that nobody played last year. However, I can see it's still in the adventure charts, although quite low, and it's got a fantastic rating. This is from HAL Laboratory. I think this is some of the guys behind Kirby.
Yes.
Done this. And it is such a simple thing. It's effectively a physics puzzler game. 2D, side-on, you are a little flying UFO with a little grabber, like those grabbers that you get in the grabber machines where you're trying to pick out a cuddly toy, and the grabber strength is that of a small gnat with chronic arthritis. And so you have to fly the UFO over by tapping left or right on the screen, and then when you need to, for example, you need to load produce onto the back of a farm truck. That's one of the first levels, and so it's got some oranges and a pumpkin and stuff like that. So you fly them all over and you drop the little grabber, you press the button, it goes down automatically, it does the grab, and then it lifts back up again, and you either get it or you don't, and then you fly back over if you've got it and then try and drop it into the back of the van or the box or whatever, and then once you've done it all, that's it, level complete. Dead simple, right? It starts to iterate on itself really cleverly. So beyond just picking things up and putting them in a box, it starts wanting you to do things like, hey, this statue's collapsed into several different pieces. Perhaps you can put it back together. Or this Colosseum's been destroyed and we need to re-erect all the pillars and put the roof back on. Or here's a bunch of cheerleaders. How about you stack them in hilarious orders? So one of them's upside down and the other one's got his foot, right? The other one's crotch and they're barely balancing. But hey, you won the level. It's fine, isn't it? That's the way that it goes. And it's a joyous little thing. It is so fun. It's premium. It's $3.99. And I think maybe that puts some people off. And it's not got loads and loads of levels. Again, like with LO, it's got even fewer than that, probably like 20, 30, though I imagine they've added more since. And this is a proper delight. Like, A, it's incredibly charming. It's got the 16-bit graphic style, but done in a big, chunky, lovely way. It's got a kick-ass theme tune. One of those, like, instantly hummable theme tunes, which is going to be stuck in your head forever. And it becomes a little bit more tactical later on, because you start to upgrade the UFO's grabber arm. And you do that by basically outfitting the UFO character. He's basically like a little flying saucer with eyes. You start buying him hats and stuff. So you buy him a little hat, and that might give him a stronger arm. And then you buy him a little kind of samurai outfit, and that might mean he moves around the level a little bit quicker. And depending on what level you're going to play, you will want to swap out your costume in order to give you the particular attribute that you'll require to complete the level. Some stuff becomes much more puzzly. Like, one level is almost like trying to play a stacky game of Tetris. So you need to pick up the blocks, the tetrominoes, and drop them into the right place. And if you're watching the video, you kind of go, oh, it looks easy. It's not easy. It's really challenging. The physics has got that slightly elasticy feel where, you know, you're compensating for overshooting. You never quite know which bit of the object you're going to grab, because if you've ever played a grabber machine, it is an unreliable science. You don't know which bit you're going to catch, and sometimes you just grab the foot when you were going for the head, and you're like, oh, this will have to make do. And then you're trying to, like, swing it into the right place or drop it down slowly from the top and all of this. There is a surprising amount of play in the mechanics, and they're beautifully balanced to create that really entertaining physics puzzler stuff where things can quickly go south. You can have your beautiful plan, and then you drop the thing on the top, and it just starts to tip and tip and oh no, the whole thing, oh god damn it. And it's got great moments like that. It's just every aspect of this one, it feels an incredibly tight and polished little entity where it doesn't go on too long. In that time, you get a lot of progression. You're not grinding away for hours and hours and hours just to get one hat or something. You unlock stuff at a good rate. You complete the levels at a good rate. You got the replayability factor. And this is one of the ones where I replay levels. And I'm not necessarily into that all the time. A lot of free-to-play stuff puts me off because of the need to grind low-level stuff I've done a billion times already. And you're just doing it because you need to get something. You're not doing it for the fun of playing it. Whereas this one, it's like, I can do better. For example, there are lots of bonuses that you can get in that very first level. As an example, if you're lifting up oranges, you can drop them into the truck, or there is a basket you can pick up and put in the truck. And if you put the oranges into the basket, which is a much smaller target, instead of just the whole boot of the truck, then you get sweet bonuses. And there's lots of that in every level. So there really is, you're very unlikely to go in there and perfect the thing first time. And because of the whole physics-y nature, every time you play it, it does feel different. There are levels where you're fishing, where you have to send the thing underwater and grab fish as they're all swimming around. You have to hit moving targets. And there's one where you're in a circus and you've got an elephant on a trapeze with one of those trapeze balancing sticks. And you're kind of loading stuff either side of the stick, so you have to keep it equally balanced while you're doing it. And there is so much to go wrong in every level, and it's a real joy trying to find out how to make it work. So even though it's got basically perfect rating, 4.9 star rating on the App Store, so I guess it did well somewhere, but I don't know lots of people who played it personally, and I think that's a crying shame, and everybody should go and give this one a look. There is a written review and a video review if you're a little bit on the fence, but it's a gem and it should be supported, because this is the kind of thing when people are going, I don't like all the free-to-play games, where's the proper premium experiences? Here. Here is your proper premium experiences. Things like this and things like Donut County, and they are the games that you're asking for. Go support them. Not that necessarily Nintendo needs loads of your money, not a struggling indie, but they're an offshoot and they've done a great job. So Part-Time UFO would be one of mine of the year. Looking at them all there, that's a sweet ass list, folks.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
I haven't played half those games, and I think I should now.
Yeah, the only ones I haven't been able to do is Detective Pikachu and Pokemon. Basically, the two Switch games. Yeah. They're the only ones I haven't been able to grab. We've also got some games that didn't quite make the list, but we reckon are sweet. So we talked about Reed 2 last week. Both the Reed games came out in 2018, and I think they're both kind of the best twitchy and brutal precision platformers out on mobile this year, and that's well worth a look. I really like Badland Brawl. Did any of you guys play that one?
No.
That was Frogmind's tower take on the whole sort of Clash Royale thing, only instead of it being top-down on a battlefield, it's side-on, and you're firing stuff out of towers. So it's kind of tower offense-ish. There's a lot of real-time bounce back. You have to aim things rather than just dropping it onto the map, and that added a really nice element. I thought that was good and slightly underrated. Asphalt 9 was the good racer. This is the one we've always been like, Gameloft. We've said plenty of stuff about Gameloft over the years. Good and bad. Like, you know, cards on the table. They've made some really good stuff, and they've also made some stuff where we think, eh, it's a bit cynical. But I think maybe Asphalt 8 was the one where I went, this is actually really, really good. They've nailed that whole arcade racer thing brilliantly in a way that other studios with more well-known console franchises haven't managed to nail it on mobile. So I think we all roughly like that. Fair play to it. Was it you that played Homo Machina originally, Rick?
Me. I played it at GDC, yeah, in March.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting.
I didn't play it properly when it finally launched. No? I've had it downloaded on my iPad for ages and just never found the time to sit down and actually play it. But yeah, I remember that. I imagine it was brilliant, like the actual finished game, because I remember loving it in the preview. Yeah, it was a really beautiful art style and interesting puzzles and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're essentially looking at a cross-section of a human body, but it's outfitted like it's a giant machine, and you're going into each part of the body, and each one's got these kind of steampunk contraptions that run the brain and the heart and lungs, and you need to do a whole bunch of different puzzles. Very nicely put together little thing. I bet nobody got it, but it was really good. And going to M for a second, this year was the year of the Battle Royale shooters arriving on mobile, so we can't not mention PUBG and Fortnite both appearing. You were the first person I knew who was into Fortnite, M.
Yeah, which is wild when you think about it, considering I don't like shooters.
But this was the one that turned you, wasn't it? Because you were into it when it was on the PC originally.
Yeah, I had a huge spell back in, it was the early year, wasn't it? Just before Easter, I think. I was on it so many times. I just became really good at it.
You did. Well, you were the one who was like always mentioning it to me, and I'd not heard of it. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then, lo, it became the biggest thing of the entire year, took over the whole world, and also arrived on mobile as well. There was a slight disparity between PUBG and Fortnite, because really the Fortnite mobile version is just Fortnite. It's just kind of straight cross-platform, whereas PUBG mobile is a different thing. It was developed exclusively for mobile. By Tencent. So it's, I think we're focusing maybe more on that as a preference over the two on mobile, because it was specifically balanced for the platform rather than just, we've ported it over and it plays with everybody and that. But I didn't play loads of either of them, to be honest with you, on mobile, mainly because it's not my genre. The multiplayer shooter is not necessarily my bag. But I know you guys, I mean, you played it on Switch, didn't you, Rick? You were playing Fortnite on Switch when it came out.
Yeah, I got well into Fortnite on Switch. That was a weird time as well, because I hate multiplayer games.
It turned both of you. It's obviously not something.
I don't know. There's just something about it that's like weirdly enjoyable. I think there's so many different ways that you can play these games. Like there's different tactics you can use. You can hide and wait till the final thing, or you can go running in and try and shoot everybody, or you can strike a balance between the two and that kind of thing. And it's open enough that you can find your own way of finding enjoyment in it. And particularly in Fortnite, they keep adding new challenges and stuff that require you to do things that don't just involve shooting people, like doing certain emotes in certain places, or like shooting clay pigeon discs in various spots around the map and that kind of thing. So they at least are allowing people to try new and interesting things within a game that is pretty much about shooting people in the face. It's a really interesting game, and it's definitely deserves all the success that it's had.
Fair play. Well, if you want to see the official Pocket Gamer list, which actually differs from all of ours quite significantly, you will be wanting to keep your eyes on the site this week. It will be, if this goes live on Friday, which I think it will, it should probably be up by then, so you can see the kind of official rating. We've tried to make it as broad a sweep as possible, something to do with a sporty-ish one and a puzzly one and an action one and stuff like that. So there should be something for everybody in there, and we'll also be doing a lot of articles to cover if you're picking up a new phone, as I said, or just general starter tips on games that we might have played over the course of the year. We generally do a lot of guides for the big games as well. I think that's probably us for the week and for the year. So if you are a fan of anything that any of us have done over the past year, then just pay us a visit to the site, drop a comment in, say hello, follow all of us if you want to do. I'm not very active on Twitter, but you guys are. So go find your things. What's your Twitter handle, Rick?
It's the Rickass, RICASS.
No
the
K.
The Rick-ass. Okay. No, no K.
No K.
I'm at metal underscore slag, but don't expect a lot out of me. That goes for life in general. And M, as we said, it's E.T. Soden, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Good. All right, then. So go and follow M for all of her future endeavors and updates on which I'm sure we both wish you well, but we are all still a little bit gutted.
Gonna miss you so much, Em.
Yeah, I'll miss you as well, of course. But let me just say, it's been a genuine pleasure. You can always invite me on.
Yes, we bloody will invite you on and bring bread, fresh bread. Okay, then, and you guys listening, we hope you've had a good 2018, despite the absolute hellscape that every other part of the year bar games has involved. My God, what's going on? So let's maybe hope that 2019 isn't such a complete shitstorm. Hope you enjoy your Christmases. Go get lovely things. Enjoy all the games. Play some stuff when you're off. Say hello to your family. Why not? Give them a wave before you disappear into your games for the entire fortnight. And we'll see you in 2019. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.